Logical questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@IRIB.ir.
So many people experience grief or depression when they lose someone dear to them. Do we have any Islamic recommendation for them? I mean, practically speaking?
Practically,
yes. In order to overcome their grief and depression after losing someone?
Yes. Practically speaking, first of all, let time pass. You know, time passing will solve lots of problems.
Yes.
In the very, for example, beginning of these kind of accidents or incidents, we are so much unhappy, we are so much sad, yeah? But the more the time passes, then it becomes better, you know? So then, of course, you have to mourn for those deceased ones. Mourning is also a kind of thing that...
Yes, mourning or azah.
Azah, that's right.
Okay.
You have to mourn. This also make you more, let's say, calm. And then you have to accept death as a reality. Do not think that death is something could be under your control. No, it never happens. So that is why you have to sometimes cry. You have to let your emotions get out of you by crying, by sometimes, you know, mourning. These are, let's say, the thing that you can go also to the cemetery.
Okay.
When the graveyards, for example, yeah?
Yes.
Or you can also remind yourself of the Shahada, martyrdom of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam. It can help you a lot. And also, yes, these are the kind of practical solutions that can help us to feel better.
Staying steadfast on your depression has for sure negative effects in your lifestyle, isn't it?
You should not let depression to get to the level that it causes you some diseases or problems, you know. That's why sometimes try to go to the cemetery, sometimes try to see, for example, the movies, photos of these people, sometimes try to ask forgiveness for them, sometimes try even to cry.
Yes,
you know, let let yourself cry. And then of course mourn for that person. It gives you better feeling.
Yes. I mean, this mourning, as you said, and this azah, which is a custom, we can say, is not only limited to the religion of Islam. In all religions, Abrahamic and also non-Abrahamic religions, there have been always all these gathering and the ceremonies for the mourning for the deceased person, although it is very much difficult. But, you know, I think the best type of tolerance or capacity could be seen, for example, after the tragedy of Karbala, especially in Lady Zainab, you know, when she witnessed all these massacre, I mean, all these, we can say, afflictions over there. But when she was asked, she said that, "I found nothing but beauty." I mean, how much a person can be, can bear, in fact, the difficulties of her time, especially a woman, you know, that time. These are all lessons for the people.
Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alayha, when she was a very small child, a kid like a kid, she lost her grandfather, the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. It was a very, very great kind of sad kind of event that happened to her life while she was only a child. Later, she lost her mother, you know.
Yes.
Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha. And later she lost her father, Amirul Mu'minin Ali alayhi salatu wasalam.
Yes.
And then her brother, Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba.
Wow.
And then her brother, Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. And then Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Look, all these sad events that happened to the life of this lady, she tolerated, she bare all these incidents very steadfast.
She became, that's why she became a role model, a patience, sabr and hell, in the history
such
of Islam.
Such a patient lady we have not experienced even in the history. If a lady can tolerate in such a way, then of course we could also tolerate and bear all these catastrophic kind of events that may happen in our life.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. And are there any recommendations if we lose, for example, someone young or our children or something like that? Because losing a child, you know, is very much much more difficult than, for example, an old one.
You know, in the Holy Quran, we are told that ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub. The more you are in contact, we can say, with Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the more you remind yourself of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it better helps you that you understand, you perceive that, okay, this child was given to me as a ni'mah, as a hadiyah, as a gift by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So he gave me this ni'mah, and now he took this ni'mah back. So I had nothing to do here, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I had belonged to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I, my own self, also belong to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Then I should ask Allah that, oh Allah, please help me to tolerate this, for example, sadness or this kind of musibah. Yeah? And also, oh Allah, please provide this deceased one with the best ni'mat, with the best rahmah, with the best blessings. This kind of things will help us to be more, inshallah, what we can say, calm and let's say, live in peace after this kind of
tragedies. Right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of grief, loss, and bereavement, and how does the religion of Islam help us in order to overcome depression in our life, especially after bereavement and losing our dear ones. It was very kind of you.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روبا شافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim marchers. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough. expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets, they are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region. With the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces, West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there's a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have one bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat, and if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10.
الإشي كان بشكل صار بعشرة.
إحنا المعنى اللي يعانيه إحنا أطفال.
The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Chanting anti-Israel slogans and carrying placards with messages thanking the IRGC for conducting Operation True Promise. Thousands of Iranians marched down the streets in major cities across the country after the Friday prayers to voice their support for the armed forces and a recent punitive military operation carried out against Israel, dubbed Operation True Promise. The retaliatory attack was in response to Israel's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st, resulting in the martyrdom of top IRGC commander, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and six other military officers. The punitive retaliatory attack involved a slew of drones and missiles targeting and causing damage to Israeli military bases.
There was a time when they could attack us and get away with it. But now the IRGC has proven that those days are over. I'm so proud of them.
We've been waiting for this moment for so long, ever since they assassinated Haj Qasem. I'm so grateful to our armed forces.
The IRGC really made all Iranians proud. We are so happy. That is why I'm here to thank them.
I was so happy on the night of the attack that I came out on the street to celebrate that the Israelis finally got what they have deserved after committing so many crimes.
The demonstrators also used the opportunity to denounce Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians.
We are here for the people of Gaza. I don't think any human being can watch what's happening and be indifferent.
Defending the oppressed is our duty. That is why I always take part in these demonstrations.
In cities all across Iran, people took part in mass demonstrations to show their support for the IRGC and Operation True Promise. Gisum Misha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Instead of beating the drums of war, it is the delicate taps of instruments such as the dulcimer or the santur in Persian and the harmonious melodies of different tongues that should be wafting across borders. As Iran celebrates its National Culture Week in South Africa, officials and the public have visited exhibitions in the key cities of Johannesburg, Pretoria and Cape Town to learn more about the Persian heritage. The event was held at the Castle of Good Hope in Cape Town, which was a Dutch colonial fort and is now a museum.
Culture is a very powerful construct because it forces people to communicate, not only through language, because I can't speak the Iranian language, they can't speak Afrikaans, which is my mother tongue, but through our handiwork, through our art, through our crafts that we do, we can connect as human beings and exchange ideas, because culture is not devoid of power and of politics.
And this view is shared by South African officials. And even within the Organization of Developing Economies, BRICS Plus, which Iran joined at the beginning of 2024.
But I'm looking forward to us coming out with a university of some sort. And that university is going to be a technology-driven university that has got culture imbued in it. Because we cannot just be driven by, you know, gadgets and technologies. We have to put our humanity within this technology. If we can do that, I believe that we can go very far as a people.
South Africa and Iran have extensive relations, and so through expanding this exchange of unique arts and crafts, they can effectively use the skills of their respective peoples to develop economic ties and, within the framework of BRICS Plus, shape a new world which breaks away from the current system. Culture is important now more than ever, as it fosters understanding and can develop closer relationships between different peoples. In a world overwhelmed with conflict, exhibitions such as these are important for peace. Asin City, Cape Town.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Operation Axa Flood not only highlighted the plight of Palestinians, but also indicated the power of Palestinian resistance in a coastal territory which has been under siege for some 17 years. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli aggression against the people of Palestine has a long and tumultuous history, marked by genocide, occupation, and countless human rights violations. The Palestinian struggle to liberate their country stands as one of the most enduring and contentious resistance movements in modern history. At its heart lies the issue of occupation, with Israel's presence in Palestinian territories being a source of deep-seated grievances, violence, and international concern. The roots of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories can be traced back to the late 19th and early 20th centuries, with the rise of the Zionist movement advocating for the establishment of a so-called Jewish homeland in historical Palestine. The Balfour Declaration of 1917, issued by the British government, lent support to these aspirations, laying the groundwork for the eventual creation of Israel in 1948. The events surrounding the creation of Israel in 1948, known as the Nakba or the Catastrophe, marked a pivotal movement in the history of the region. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced from their homes and became refugees as a result of the conflict between Israeli and Arab forces. In 1967, Israel launched a strike against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in what became known as the Six-Day War. Supported by its Western allies, including the United States and Britain, the Israeli regime occupied the west bank of the River Jordan, including eastern part of the city of Al-Quds, the Gaza Strip, the Sinai Peninsula, and the Golan Heights. This marked the beginning of Israel's military occupation of Palestinian territories, which continues to this day. The Palestinians have utilized a variety of diplomatic and legal options to end the Israeli occupation over the past 7 decades. In the early 1990s, efforts were made to negotiate a peaceful resolution to allow Palestinians to have their own state. Known as the Oslo Accord, it never put an end to the Israeli aggression as the regime continued its settlement expansion in the occupied Palestinian territories. There were other deals, including Camp David, which never resulted in peace and only emboldened Israel in its atrocities against Palestinians. Throughout its occupation of Palestinian territories, Israel has committed all kinds of atrocities against Palestinians, including massacring and non-stop human rights abuses, such as land confiscation, home demolitions, arbitrary arrests, and excessive use of force against Palestinian civilians. The Palestinian resistance to the Israeli occupation has taken various forms. It started with peaceful protests and civil disobedience, but with major world powers' unconditional support for Israel, under whose influence even Arab countries started normalizing their ties with the Israeli regime, the Palestinians were thus obliged to take up armed resistance to achieve their rights. The Palestinians decided to take up arms and fight for their liberation of their homeland, with groups such as Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad gaining prominence in the popular struggle. On 7th of October 2023, the Palestinian resistance fighters launched their biggest operation yet, a massive and deadly response to over 70 years of Israeli atrocities against them. Thousands of rockets fired from Gaza rained down on the occupied territories. The projectiles reached as far north as Tel Aviv and as far east as Al-Quds. Palestinian fighters stormed towns in the south of the occupied territories, launching deadly attacks and taking more than 200 captives, including military personnel. The 10-hour Al-Aqsa flood operation dealt a humiliating blow to Israel's much-touted military and intelligence, so-called superiority. Shortly after the operation, the Israeli military launched a massive strike on the besieged Gaza Strip. It has massacred nearly 35,000 Palestinians so far, many of them women and children. The Israeli regime, encouraged by the United States and its Western allies and support, outlined 3 major objectives for this onslaught on Gaza. The Israeli regime has not only failed to achieve any of its goals, but also was forced to negotiate with the resistance movement Hamas on a ceasefire. The failure to achieve these goals has not only exposed the limitations of Israel's military prowess, but it has also highlighted the resilience and the determination of the Palestinian resistance forces. Osama Hamdan, Hamas's representative in Lebanon, said, "There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively." Osama Hamdan added, "This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but there's the question, was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly, it was expected that there would be a reaction, because it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you." Osama Hamdan added, "Under this occupation for 75 years, you have 2 choices. Either you do nothing, and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist, and the enemy will continue the aggression." He added, "But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to the right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for its occupation." The English website of the Mehr News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Operation Al-Aqsa flood marked a significant turning point for the Palestinian people, showcasing the harsh reality of Israeli occupation to the world. This operation not only highlighted the plight of Palestinians, but also indicated the power of Palestinian resistance in a coastal territory which has been under siege for the past 17 years. Prior to Operation Al-Aqsa flood, Arab countries were moving towards normalizing their ties with Israel, overshadowing the Palestinian cause. However, the Gaza war that followed the 7th of October operation has shifted global attention back to the long-standing struggle of the Palestinian people for their freedom over the past 7 decades. It's been a stark reminder of the brutality of the Israeli occupation. Despite Israel's military might and reputation, the war in Gaza has been perceived as a humiliating defeat for Israel on multiple fronts. Public opinion worldwide has increasingly turned against Israel as images of civilian casualties and destruction in Gaza have circulated widely, shedding light on the brutality of the Israeli military, which has left no safe zone in Gaza. Even hospitals and United Nations refugee shelters in Gaza have been hit. The 7th of October operation is a testament to the power of Palestinian resistance, showcasing how a small and determined movement can withstand the might of the Israeli army, which is backed by the United States and many other Western countries. This operation highlighted the unwavering resilience of the Palestinian people and emphasized that resistance is not only a means of survival, but also a powerful tool in securing the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Beta.
And this is Mustafa. There are so many things out there, I think, that, you know, today's youth is involved in. And you would probably know better than I do, because I'm not that far away from, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
I do follow, you know, things that are going on. But, you know, what are things today that are really important to youth, or that they're really attracted towards, they're really involved in? You know, what's going on these days? You tell me.
I believe social media is the biggest interest of the youth generation, because it's interesting. And it's entertaining. It's something that you don't get bored out. And whenever I go through writing Instagram, I scroll up the posts and the reels, it's like there is no end for this pleasure, you know? And the speed of the changes and the speed of the, alteration of people. For example, there are some posts that, for example, there was a photo of 20 years ago and the photo after 20 years. And these are interesting for my brain because there is a specific speed of these kind of changes and alterations. Which is destructive, because I get used to the speed and I'm interested to be speedy, but good things take time.
Yeah, I would say, you know, and by the way, it's not only youth that in social media, like my parents, even like my wife's parents are visiting these days.
Yeah.
And they spend a lot of time on their phones, you know, going on YouTube and things. So it's not just young people, by the way.
Same for my grandparents here.
Right. And they get all sorts of wrong news, by the way, from random YouTube channels. But anyway, you're right. I think social media is definitely one of those things. And connected to that, by the way, I think would be artificial intelligence, AI.
Yeah.
Are you seeing people, a lot of young people you know, using AI tools or interested in that?
Me, myself.
Yeah.
I'm using AI for,
I don't know,
my assignment or making PowerPoints presentations and something like that, you know, because I don't want to waste my time whenever I can have the best form of whatever I want. And this AI actually is another interest of the youth generation, I believe, specifically the one that you can ask questions and the AI will answer these questions because it's really interesting to challenge artificial intelligence, for example, about the emotions of human beings. And mostly the information of AI is not enough to answer these kind of complicated questions.
I've used AI for like definitely for you know, writing and like work stuff, studying, because it's really good, for example, for getting answers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of times, like, teachers will give us like a list of questions, by the way, in Persian. I say, hey, take these questions and give me the answers in English. Okay, so it's like, it's very, very good to sort of help even study or be productive.
Cigarette, tobacco, alcohol, and all of these things which are seriously detrimental to the process and function of brain. And I don't know why is it becoming the interest of this generation, but at least as a candidate of this generation, I try to avoid these kind of things.
Well, obviously you need to listen to the other episode where we talked about dopamine hits, right?
Yeah.
Addiction is very much directly correlated to dopamine.
Exactly.
Right? Apart from cigarettes, I mean, you see a lot of people using, you know, vaporizers these days.
Yeah.
You know, vapes. So those are definitely things, I think, that attract youth. It's only, unfortunately, only part of, I think part of it is really normal in the sense that that's what a lot of young people do, right? They don't really care as much about self-harm. Because I remember when I was like maybe in my early 20s, you know, I didn't really care about a lot of things that were maybe causing me self-harm, things like smoking or... But now I realize that, you know, why those things caused harm. What happens with by the cigarette that you brought up or vapes is that it's not easy to let go of, right?
Yeah.
It's really, and I see a lot of people my age nowadays are a little bit older than me. It's almost impossible for them to let go of cigarettes or these kind of things. So, you know, things that you like right now, they're going to become habits and a part of your life as you're older.
Exactly. Right? You mentioned a really important key role of our discussion that your interests will become your habits. And these habits might be destructive for your future. So let's talk about these habits after a break.
Sure. Right, so we're back from the break, and we've been discussing, you know, what are some things that are prevalent among youth today, right? What are things that they really love or like these days?
And we were supposed to talk about the habits.
Right.
The habitual routine of our day-to-day life. For example, you know, to some extent, you want to, for example, smoke a cigarette because it's cool, because you are having fun. And if you ask most of the youth generations that are smoking cigarette, why are you smoking cigarette, they only tell you that because it's fun. And right. After a long time, the answer will become because it's addiction, because I cannot let go. And this is so sad that you are choosing your lifestyle. And the one thing that I want to emphasize in this part is that putting aside interest, we have to have the best lifestyle. And in order to make this, sometimes you're not interested in, for example, going for sport at the, I don't know, like 6 o'clock in the morning. It's so difficult. And good things are difficult. And the thing is, you can make use of that habit thing that you mentioned. For example, you can make studying a habit for yourself. You can have a specific place in order to study. And when you get used to the place, when you sit on that chair, the motivation for you to study like a habit will actually have its own flow into your veins. And this is interesting.
And, you know, one of the positive things that I see youth that are today that are, like, being attracted to is actually exercise.
Yeah.
And that is really good. You know, I think my parents' generation was not so much into exercise as much as we see, for example, today's youth.
I do agree, yeah.
So it's the same thing, you know, like, if you continue exercising now, it's going to help you in your old age, right? It's helped me a lot because I've been exercising for the past 20, 25 years. So I have a lot less body pains. I have a lot less disease. I have a lot, you know, so much.
I know.
Right. So it helps you so much develop those habits right now. I think one of the negative things that we're seeing in youth today, which has always been there, is so much attraction towards entertainment and TV shows. And unfortunately, I think entertainment today has so many elements which are forbidden in our religion these days, yeah. Right? And I don't know, like, how openly I can talk about this, but, you know, we're seeing the involvement in, like, forbidden entertainment. It's reaching, like, levels of, like, mental illnesses.
Yeah, unfortunately. Right?
To the point where we're seeing 7 or 8 year old kids being, or 9 year old kids being addicted to, like, adult movies and, like, you know, those kind of things. So you can imagine what kind of an impact that was going to have, like, as you grow up and as you get married and as you kind of continue with your life. It's becoming very difficult.
Yeah, it's becoming a challenge for sure, that we're seeing this entertainment is the main goal of our life. The dopamine that you mentioned is becoming the goal. And we are looking for more joy. We're looking for more pleasure. And we're not thinking about the consequences. After the experience of the pleasure, we may think about the consequence of that, which is a big challenge. Because I believe we are so much focused on what is interesting, what we love, what is good. You know, sometimes you have to go through pain. This is life, and it's not supposed to be easy.
I think one of the things that youth don't like these days is too many rules and regulations.
Yeah. Right?
I think that's always been the case, by the way.
Limitations, maybe.
Yeah, limitations. And I think now that I'm a little bit older, I realize that without limitations, there's actually no way for you to really grow. Okay? What do I mean by that? So, for example, if you take, like, let's say you take anything in this world, like, actually take a tree, right? In order for a tree to grow, it requires, you know, we all know what it requires. It requires light, it requires soil.
Yeah.
But if you don't provide the right environment, the right limits, you know, let's say the temperature is too high, the temperature is too cold, that tree is never going to be able to grow. So you need limits in everything for it, or in order for it to sort of reach its perfection or its potential, right?
Yeah.
It's the same with human beings.
It is. So let's have my point of view about these limitations and your generation after a short break.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to your listeners. This is Youth Station. So, brother, up to now, we talked about the interest of the youth generation and the detrimental interest that will lead to bad habits in the future. And it's about consequences of our health and both physical and spiritual impact of the things that we are doing nowadays. And we opened the door to this topic that what do we detest?
Yeah, I was just saying that we detest limitations, right? And that's a big part of being a youth. I remember myself, I didn't like my parents like telling me what to do all the time or what other people were saying. But I'm just saying now I realize that in order to like reach our potential, we need those limitations. And I think I mentioned this maybe in some other episodes as well. Like, if you want to become like the best at anything, you're going to have like a disciplined and limited life, right?
Exactly.
If you want to have like the best like physical body, then you're going to have to like limit what you're eating, for example. If you want to have the, you know, you want to be the best doctor in the world, you're going to have to spend time studying and you're going to have to sacrifice a lot of other things, right? So you shouldn't detest limitations. You should realize that they're actually a way for you to, like, growth. And you mentioned pain, right? you know, there's the famous no pain, no gain, right? You
exactly. Heard English.
So yeah, without pain, there's no gain.
And, you know, I believe that restriction and limitation is an opportunity for you to grow. As you mentioned, it's a really important process to be organized, to have priorities. Priority is one of the things that our youth generation is trying to run away from. And, you know, they feel like if they keep themselves in a state of denial, for example, I have a lot of time to do that. No, it's not like that. Your time is limited, believe right. me. And till the moment that you keep and you put yourself in the state of denial of your limitations, you cannot grow.
Not only that, we're living in very, very competitive societies, by the way,
yeah.
right? If you're not doing the work, some other youth or someone other is doing it. And you're going to be left behind while that person is going to like move forward, right? Like a very good example that one of my teachers gave is that, you know, today's... you can specialize in so many different things, right?
Like, yeah.
And he said, like, today knowledge is very much like, imagine like the sun, there's sunlight, which is everywhere, right? But once you get a magnifying glass, right, that sunlight gets concentrated and can put a, you know, it can create a fire.
Exactly.
Right? So in the same way, like, you should specialize in something so you can create fire, you know, in that field. But specialization requires a lot of hard work, it requires studying, it requires those limitations.
Yeah.
So you're in a competitive environment. If you're not focusing on what you're trying to do, you're not going to make it because someone else will beat you to it.
Allah Almighty, He is the creator of this body. He knows better than anyone in this world that what kind of dark desires are in your soul. And even we have this beautiful verse of Holy Quran that Allah Almighty is nearer to you than your jugular vein. And this is so beautiful. It means that Allah Almighty knows you, know all the difficulty you're facing. And sometimes you have to sacrifice your interests in order to have the satisfaction of Allah Almighty.
You made a very good point. And that's, I would say, we see this maybe less among you today that are attracted towards spirituality
yeah.
or kind of religious thing. But, you know, those youth that are attracted towards those things, examples of those, I would say, look at the people that are right now that you consider to be pious and good people.
Yeah.
They were pious and good people when they were in their youth, right? That's why they've turned to as they're older.
Exactly.
So the more you develop yourself during the youth, the better you will be as you're older. And I believe that's all the time we have for this
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So please join us again. Alaykum assalam.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.